You're listening to The Cat Business Show, and I'm Kat. Lockdown UK has put a lot of companies under enormous pressure, and some sectors are faring better than others. The arts and entertainment industry has been hit particularly hard, and in order to survive this global crisis, are having to develop innovative ways to reinvent the way they work. One such business is Music Heritage London, which specialises in hosting guided tours and events recreating the swinging 60s, travelling round some of the most significant music spots of the capital in a double-decker bus. Now, in the absence of being able to hit the road physically, I chat with Music Heritage London's director, Paul Endicott, about how they're taking their swinging 60s London tours to an international audience for passengers to enjoy the experience virtually from the comfort of their own home. This is the business of guided tours. All I can say then, Paul, is welcome to the show. And I want to hear all about your story because it's a really exciting one from what I've read. New times for us all, I think, with this COVID-19, isn't there? But do you want to just, before we go into the COVID-19 and how things have changed, maybe just give us a little description of what your business is all about and really what it looked like before all everything changed?
Absolutely, would love to, Kat. You've got to go back 5 years when I launched Music Heritage London. And the reason for launching it was to package and promote the vast music heritage that we have in West London. We all have heard or have visited Liverpool and seen what a fantastic job they've done with music tourism in Liverpool. And it contributes over £100 million a year to the day and nighttime economy of Liverpool. Wow. It was started in 1981, so it's been going a few years. My background is in advertising and marketing. I've been living in Richmond for over 40 years, and I'm a semi-pro musician. And when advertising became, well, I'm probably past its sell-by date, having set up the business, advertising changed so much in the times I've been with it, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
There's so many tools in the toolbox, and there's a certain ageism that's related to the industry. So at the age of 59 and three quarters, I decided, you know what, I've been burning, this passion has been burning in me to do something with it, because nobody had put the vast collateral that West London has, re music, on the map, on the tourism map. And as I said, I visited Liverpool to get some feedback, to get some bit of information as to how they do it up there, and even met up with the guys that launched it. He's become a consultant of ours. I sit about starting tours in West London, initially between Richmond and Twickenham and Teddington, on a 1965 Routemaster bus.
I know, it looks great.
Applied to Trans. you've had a look at it.
Oh yes, it looks absolutely great. Real good fun as well. Everybody seems to be smiling.
It was great. Absolutely. Well, the thing is, I kind of made a mistake, and I suppose, you know, it's all trial and error when you're starting a new business up, especially in an area that you're not that acquainted with. So initially I applied for Transport for London to get an LSP, a London Service Permit, which allowed me to have my own bus route in between Richmond, Twickenham and Teddington. I had 18 numbers on the bus stops. The 60S was the number of my bus, which I thought was quite quaint.
Fabulous.
And we did Friday, Saturday and Sunday. We did 7 hours, 1 hour tours. We did seven tours a day, which was great fun for me, a great learning curve, but we didn't get the engagement from those that just wanted to travel home. There's so many that really loved it, but others that they just wanted to get home as quickly as possible with their Oyster card.
Yeah.
Even though we were cheaper than an Oyster, the fact is that they just had their Oyster. Stage two was moving into London. We collaborated with the Hard Rock Cafe. We went through ticketing agents, Golden Tours, etc., Get Your Guide. But because we were the new kids on the block, we weren't known. The sales weren't fantastic. I put a schedule on for, I think it was once a week or twice a week, and it didn't quite work. So I held back again. And year three, I did something else. Anyway, cut a long story short, last year we were just about to launch with the Royal Albert Hall. They were selling our tickets in a package, which was 60s at the Hall and bus tour. So they were selling tickets from the box office, Royal Albert Hall box office. We just finished a couple of trials, just about to roll out this summer. And we were working with larger travel agencies and tour operators across the world who were booking 4 days, 5 days in London, and we were looking after them for four out of the 5 days, mostly on the bus tours, taking them to these fantastic legendary locations, the Half Moon, the Troubadour, Olympic Studios, places that the normal tourist wouldn't necessarily go to on a music tour of London. And we were also engaging with, in the 5 years I've been doing this, I've been really lucky to have got the support of a lot of the music legends themselves. So in the last couple of years, for example, we've had Kenny Jones on the bus, Bruce Welch and Brian Bennett from The Shadows, Mick Avery of The Kinks. The list is endless. So we were really just starting to motor this summer. We were getting a lot of feedback, or a lot of engagement from the younger generation. And as you can imagine, the sustainability of this project is appealing to the younger generation, not just the baby boomers who want to relive the halcyon years.
Amazing. I think what's lovely is the fact that you've been through a number of different transitions there with that learning curve over the course of that 5 years. And through that, you've got some partnerships and you've got different outlets to reach your different markets. But I think what's great is that what you're saying there is actually it's now gone further than what you expected with a different demographic. You know, not just the baby boomers just reliving stuff, but actually capturing people's imagination.
Yeah, it was always my intention to not just talk about the music, but try and educate the younger generation into the importance of the cultural revolution that happened in the 60s and why it happened. Why was fashion so big and music? Why did music take off? Why were there five different genres of music within the space of 5 years that hit, the UK, it hit the world, really. But there's some fantastic and really interesting stories that can be told about how what begat what. Mm-hmm. And not just to say the music, but the culture, the counterculture. It is quite a fascinating story.
Yeah, you're so right. And actually, it's a time that people look back to, the swinging 60s, and there was the fashion was absolutely booming, wasn't it? It had that look that set the scene really for the 70s with the rebellion of the punk era, etc. But the 60s was it, wasn't it? It broke the mold for everything beforehand.
Absolutely. You've got to go back to the austerity years, post-war austerity, and the reasons why the youth of the day were rebelling against. They didn't want to be like their parents. Going to church on a Sunday and putting on your Sunday best was not really in their mantra. They didn't feel comfortable with it. They were hearing music from America in the 50s, Elvis, etc., and Buddy Holly, and they were really turned on by this music, rather than listening to Matt Monro and the likes of the crooners of the day. And again, just a little bit later on, there was the movement that there were jobs about. When there were jobs about, the kids had money in their pocket. What do they spend the money on? Obviously, fashion was high up there. They wanted to make a statement. But also, the music was starting to get really interesting. The art colleges around here, I mean, it is really fascinating how it all works together. Mm. And that's the story that the younger generation, we've had, you know, 20-year-olds on the tours in the last couple of years who've dressed in 60s gear. So, oh, you've dressed for the occasion. And they said, no, we always dress like this. You know, there's a friendship group that are going about playing 60s or music that's inspired them. Mm. So it's, you can see the similarity of the 60s music, but they're dressing in the same way as well. We also put on events as well, and in December 2018, it was the 50th anniversary of the Beggar's Banquet album release, and the Rolling Stones had a party at the Gore Hotel in 1968. So in 2018, I contacted the Gore and I said, look, you know, let's put on an event here, because it's a milestone with regard to, you know, one of the most amazing bands that's ever been. You know, you're either a Beatles fan or a Stones fan, but yeah, the Stones are still playing and recording now, you know. So we put on this event in the same room that the Rolling Stones had their party. I hired not the Rolling Stones to come and play the music. Brilliant. And the Mick Jagger is a doppelganger for Mick. I spoke with Chris Welsh, who is the journalist for The Melody Maker, who was at the party 50 years before, to come and say a few words. And I tracked down Michael Joseph, who was the photographer of the Beggar's Banquet album cover, and I invited him down to say a few words. So we had the music, we had dinner, we spent an hour on the bus tour going through swinging 60s, cruising the King's Road. So it was really a celebration of not only the launch of the Beggar's Banquet album 50 years before, but a celebration of the 60s genre. And we had people flying in from Europe for it, you know. So everyone was happy. It was a sellout. So they're the sort of events that we are staging now. It's not just a gig. Mm. It's an experience. And that's where I think we're a little bit different than the others out there.
Yeah, that's incredible. I think what's also interesting for me is that, you know, there was this role model, as it were, with Liverpool, a model that actually worked from a commercial perspective, and it captured the imagination of everybody, and it's still going today, isn't it? But yeah, you're right, there was nothing for London, and actually it suggests, why not? Why on earth do you think it hadn't been done before?
Well, funny enough, the guy that started tourism, music tourism in Liverpool in 1981, Mr. Jones, he was on the phone to me a lot. He said, Paul, you know, you're a little bit behind the ball, you know, the game here. I started it in 81 and you're doing it starting it in 2015, you know. Mm. And I said, I'm just amazed that nobody's done it. He said, the problem you're going to have in London, he's absolutely right, is that unlike Liverpool, where there was not a lot going on in Liverpool in 1981. Yes, they had the football club, but it was suffering quite a bit. And music tourism opened up. It took them a long time. They grew organically. So by the time, you know, the Cavern Club then became established again, you know, it was doing great things, but there was nothing else going on.
Yeah.
But you did find that inbound tourists were coming to London and then shooting up to Liverpool for a day or maybe two, staying at the Hard Day's Night Hotel and going to the Cavern Club, doing the Magical Mystery Tour, thinking that that's where the music scene of the 60s started, with the Merseybeats and the Beatles. And the Beatles obviously travel very well, you know. Or have done. So the problem with London is there's so much noise in London. There are so many other attractions.
Yeah.
And he's absolutely right, you know, to try and get our head above the clouds and to be recognised and seen has proved difficult. And this year, the beginning of this year, we were just starting to motor with, you know, we'd worked with the V&A Museum with some of their related exhibitions there. Obviously the Hard Rock. So we had some great destination partners that we were working with.
Yeah.
And then CV19 came and smacked us across the cheeks.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's put paid to so many people's plans, Paul. It's just heartbreaking, really, isn't it? Because it's now changed everything. I mean, we've just recently heard that the Chancellor's going to put some sort of package together for the entertainment industry. But, you know, what that quite looks like, really, in reality, once you get hold of it, is different, because it's about social distancing and how do you actually do all these things, isn't it? You know, so
yeah.
What's been your solution in the short term?
Well, after a few sleepless nights when lockdown was thrown on us, obviously that cut off the supply of inbound tourists to London.
Yeah.
The travel agents we were working with, you know, in at the end of last year, we carried 127 Norwegian tourists for 8 days. You know, suddenly I contacted a few travel agents and they were in, you know, in repose. They didn't want to speak about anything to do with them. They needed a couple of weeks off just to get their head around what was going to happen.
Yeah.
And subsequently, I've spoken to a few and they're saying, look, we're writing off 2020 and we're gearing up for 2021. And they are struggling, as we were, until I thought, well, you know, there must be a solution here. People can't come to London. So let's take London to the world.
Mm.
And with the advent of Zoom now being a fantastic tool, a communication tool, we are now taking Swinging 60s London and the tours, both scheduled and bespoke if they want them, to a global audience in the comfort and safety of their own home.
Fabulous.
So you can be in your ranch in California or your high rise in Buenos Aires in Argentina, and you can pop off to London live with an interactive tour and sit amongst however many people on the tour, which pretty much always includes a 60s celebrity.
Yeah.
So they can have first-hand anecdotes, stories over and above the commentary that I give and the live music that we play and the images that I show on the Zoom, share your screen so I can show what the pictures look like in the 60s and what the place looks like now, today, live, come hell or, you know, come rain or shine.
Mm.
In fact, we had one a couple of weeks ago and it was hailing and I still had to, you know, have the phone outside the car while I was being hailed.
Oh, no. That's good for you.
So it's really exciting. And then looking at the other opportunity, obviously, when you're going global, you need to look at languages. So we've teamed up with a translation company up in Halifax, West Yorkshire, mm-hmm. who do live interpretation on the tours as well. So we could do a tour for 100 passengers in Latin Spanish,
right,
rather than Iberian Spanish. You know, I think there are slight idiosyncrasies of the languages. So we can choose tours in the mother tongue of the language with the market that we're targeting.
Wow. So that's making it far more far-reaching, isn't it? And as you say, it's global, isn't it? We've got a worldwide audience out there and it's taking it to them, which is great. The thing
Absolutely.
That's sort of coming to mind here with me, Paul, is how are you actually doing that? Are you doing it in like a real time? So you're physically going around yourself? You know, you mentioned there about it
Absolutely.
Hailing. Right. So they're with you
yeah.
and you're taking them in a virtual world, you know, in real time.
Well, yeah, the only virtual thing is the fact that they're not in London, but mm-hmm. they feel like they're in London. For example, 4 weeks ago, we had four passengers that came over from, I think we had four from California, one from Vancouver, one from Cape Town, and two from Spain.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the people from California booked on the a tour coming up in a week's time. In fact, one of the guys is coming on the third tour in the space of 4 weeks.
Okay.
He said, Paul, I'd pay the money for that just to come down the streets of London real time because I just feel I'm going to London for an hour.
Wow.
You know, and, you know, So anything that happens on the tour, whether it's a technical fault, which we haven't, touch wood, had any of so far, where we may lose a signal or whatever, it's all been hunky-dory so far. But we do have some people that come up to the minibus, because we're in the shuttle bus. It's a psychedelic shuttle bus.
Yes, I've seen it. So that's great.
You've seen it. Yes. So people inevitably come up and knock on the window and start, you know, interacting with me, even though I'm on a tour with passengers from all over the world. So it is real time.
Oh, that's wonderful.
There are many, many tours out there that are, inverted commas, virtual tours, but they're pre-recorded. They may be a little slicker because of the pre-recording, so they may have done it in the studio, but it doesn't have that same engagement and authenticity that ours does, because it is live, and we do have a 60s legend on board. The Beatles' friend Tony Bramwell was on recently, and he's been with the Beatles since they were kids, you know. We have John Lennon's childhood girlfriend that comes on, Patricia Rinder. The Beatles' hairdresser, Michael Cavendish, has come on quite often, actually. He tells stories about, you know, when he was apple tailoring on the King's Road, cutting the Beatles' hair, not only the Beatles, but the Bee Gees. And so the anecdotes are just, you know, A, they're firsthand. B, they're really funny. You know, he told John Lennon once that he was going bald, you know. Well, no, in fact, he didn't tell him. He leaked the story to the press, and John Lennon found out about it from an article in the press.
Oh,
and then he gets the phone call from John Lennon a couple of days later saying, Leslie, I want a word with you. You know, you can imagine it, can't you?
I can. How wonderful is that? And that's what makes it so unique and exciting, I suppose, isn't it? It's, you know, it's that moment of living that time again, isn't it? Brings it to life.
Yeah, but also interest to the younger generation, because, you know, God forbid, you know, how many years have we got left for people to have those first-hand recollections of some, you know, momentous occasion or some fantastic story from the 60s. And we are seeing, you know, good engagement from the younger generation. I think that is really appealing.
Yeah, it's exciting, isn't it? I'm just also curious as to how you deal with the different time zones, because you're talking there about people in the, you know, in Texas or whatever, actually wanting to go on the tour again. They presumably have to fit in with the tour as it's going around London, don't they, rather than adapting it for that time zone? How do you deal with it?
Well, we're adding more and more tours as we go. You know, we've only started doing this 2 or 3 weeks ago. So the tours are at 6 o'clock in the evening, which fits both Atlantic and Pacific times in America, and obviously Canada is a big market, and also South America, which is a massive market for British music. And obviously it covers Europe. But I've had a few communications from Australasia, one from Japan recently and one from Australia. So we're going to be starting tours at something like 10 o'clock in the morning for them. So because I think it's 2 o'clock in the morning when it's 6 o'clock here.
Yeah.
So unless they're night owls, they wouldn't really wake up for a tour at that time. So we're going to do specific tours for specific time zones.
And that'll also presumably help with any translation issues that you have in terms of interpreters, etc. as well, won't it?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Wow.
But with the targeting, we would target, for example, we've just done a little Facebook campaign to Argentina. We've got some fantastic you know, we had thousands of likes, etc. But I found that there is a barrier to engagement or barrier to booking, ticket booking, because of the language barrier. And that's why I've decided to, you know, start doing the tours in different languages. So we'll be starting off with Spanish and then looking at others as we target different countries. So we can then create a tour of the time zone that relates to that country.
Yeah, that's brilliant. I'm just also thinking, actually, when it all comes back, let's say, you know, COVID finally gets sorted and we're actually out there again and the industry is working, do you think that you'll carry on doing these tours as well? alongside the actual events.
Absolutely, Kat. That's one of the things that I've realised is that whilst many people will be coming to London, they'll be travelling, people can travel, but there's still going to be, you know, the mass market that won't be able to come to London or not planning to come to London for 2-3 years, but they want to do a tour. And we're going to be increasing the tours again organically. You know, once we get some more engagement, we'll add to the supply once the demand increases. But we will continue with the virtual tours in parallel with the real live tours. And there is a benefit for people coming on the virtual tours is that if they hang on to their ticket, they will get the money they paid for the ticket taken off a real live tour when they come to London.
Fabulous. That's a nice incentive as well. I was going to say that surely if you've been on the virtual one, but if you do get over here, you're going to want to go on the real one, aren't you?
Yeah. Nothing like being on the real one. You know, we've got joss sticks burning. I mean, it's very, very immersive and authentic. The music we play was put together for us by Radio Caroline with the original 60s jingles.
Oh, wonderful.
So you can get a feel now. We've got props in the back, so if people want photographs. I've had to take all the soft furnishings outside of the shuttle bus simply because of the COVID restrictions. So we've got a screen in there now and it's cleansed after every tour because we've just opened it up to private tours for families and for bubbles.
Right.
So up to 6 people can now travel on the tour.
Yeah.
Whether it's the schedule or a bespoke tour. Up to 6 people, family or a bubble that they're, I think you can have 2 families now, you know, getting together because, you know, we're very aware of this, you know, the restrictions put upon us, but the health and safety of our passengers is paramount.
Of course, absolutely. And no doubt it's going to be a little bit difficult for some time, isn't it? But it sounds to me like you've got a great adaptation going on, whether it be personal tours or the virtual world. You know, it's a great way of transforming your business, meeting the market problems, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's had coronavirus not reared its ugly head, we wouldn't have thought about going virtual and Zoom wouldn't have been about.
No.
So it's, you know, out of the face of adversity comes opportunities, and we were lucky. I mean, touch wood, in concept, the thing works, and judging by the TripAdvisor reviews we've been getting from the international audience that we've carried, you know, they seem to love it, but they could be so musically inclined that it only appeals to a very fine audience. We're not relaxed in the knowledge that this is our way out of the situation. We need to make sure that we're as good as our last tour and we put on the best possible experience that we can for our passengers. We've extended the tours at the end. Again, one of the comments that we got back, and I always ask for comments on the tours, you know, because we're always trying to perfect the tour.
Mm.
So we keep the tour open after the hour. Some tours are an hour, some tours are an hour and a half, because that's a long time to be on Zoom.
Yeah.
But they wanted to extend the tour to have more Q&A time with the 60s celebrity. And I suddenly thought, well, as long as the 60s celebrity is fine with it, and let's face it, they're not going anywhere at the moment. You know, Tony Bramwell stuck in Totnes, where he should be at a Beatles convention in America talking to 60,000 people. He's stuck at home at Totnes.
Yeah.
So he's quite happy to talk to 20, 30, 40 people on one of our virtual tours.
Yeah, yeah, brilliant. And it sounds an absolutely wonderful experience. So tell me, Paul, where can people get their tickets and how much does it all cost?
Well, the tickets at the Hours virtual tour is £12. And the Beatles in West London tour, which we're just launching next weekend, is £15. But as I mentioned, you know, if you come, when you come to London, you hang on to your proof of purchase, then you can get that money taken off a real live tour. They're bookable on our website. We have a link on the landing page, homepage of our website, that takes you straight through to the virtual tour booking page. The website address is www.60sbus.london.
Brilliant. And it sounds to me like it's a complete and utter bargain, and I think I might well go on one myself. You've really sold it to me. Oh, Paul.
Lovely, Kat.
Thank you so much for that. It sounds like you've really done exceptional work in terms of not only building up a business that sounds completely unique, but then adapting it into this environment and actually learning lessons that could actually help going forward. So, that, you know, some quite silver linings in the cloud, should we say.
Fantastic. All right, Kat, thank you very much.
And thank you very much for your time, Paul. That's been great, and best wishes for everything.